Sarasatashishi Majasamanga Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Antakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakura Ki Jai Swayam Shri Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopina Shaila Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Tur Dham Ki Jai Navadvipa Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Vintalai. Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namale. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesis and Nivani Vaskachade Satamani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Truvishcha Kripasam Vyavatam Titanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavivinamaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So it's September 22nd, 2018 in Abu Dhabi. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 23, Devahuti's Lamentation, Text 2. I hope that's correct, because that's what I prepared for. Is that correct?
Yes.
Very good. Visrambrenatma sochena
Visrambrenatma sochena
Gauravena damena cha
Gauravena damena cha
Shushushaya soriddena
Shushushaya soriddena
Macha madhuraya chabo
Macha madhuraya chabo
Visrambena
Visrambena
with intimacy
with intimacy
Atmasochena, with purity of mind and body. Gauravena, with great respect. Damena,
with
control of the senses. Cha,
and
Shushushaya,
with service.
Soridena,
with love.
Vacha,
with
words.
Madhuraya,
sweet.
Cha,
and
Bho,
Ovidura. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ovidura. Okay. Devahuti served your husband with intimacy and great respect. With control of the senses, with love and with sweet words. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here two words are very significant. But I will ask you later. I'm sorry, I was a teacher for a long time.
So.
It does show, doesn't
it? Does.
Yeah. I hope it's not annoying.
No.
Devahuti served her husband in two ways, Visrambena and Gauravena. These are two important processes in serving the husband or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Visrambena means with intimacy. And Gauravena means with great reverence. The husband is a very intimate friend. Therefore, the wife must render service just like an intimate friend. And at the same time, she must understand that the husband is superior in position. If any of you also plan to have some musical accompaniment for the lecture, if you can please make sure that the music matches the message. Okay, and if your music isn't going to Mass to Message, please put your phone on vibrate. And if you're expecting a call from the Queen of England, please sit in another room. If you don't know how to put your phone on vibrate, please ask somebody next to you. If there's any teenagers, you can ask them. Okay. The husband is a very intimate friend. Therefore, the wife must render service just like an intimate friend. And at the same time, she must understand that the husband is superior in position, and thus she must offer him all respect. A man's psychology and a woman's psychology are different. As constituted by bodily frame, a man always wants to be superior to his wife, and a woman as bodily constituted is naturally inferior to her husband. Thus, the natural instinct is that the husband wants to post himself as superior to the wife, and this must be observed. Even if there is some wrong on the part of the husband, the wife must tolerate it, and thus there will be no misunderstanding between husband and wife. Vishrambena means with intimacy, but it must not be familiarity that breeds contempt. According to the Vedic civilization, a wife cannot call her husband by name. In the present civilization, the wife calls her husband by name, but in Hindu civilization, she does not. Thus, the inferiority and superiority complexes are recognized. Dhamenacha, a wife has to learn to control herself even if there is a misunderstanding. Sorudena vacha madhuraya means always desiring good for the husband and speaking to him with sweet words. A person becomes agitated by so many material contacts in the outside world. Therefore, in his home life, he must be treated by his wife with sweet words. Vishrambena atmasochena goravena dhamena cha sushrushaya sodadena vacha madhuraya chapo. O Vidura, Devahuti served her husband with intimacy and great respect, with control of the senses, with love, and with sweet words. So this verse, as Srila Prabhupada notes in the purport, is very important both in the relationship between husband and wife and in the relationship between the soul and the Supreme Lord. Now, I'm not using a microphone, so why doesn't everybody move forward a little bit? I'm not armed. It's fine. Just, yeah. I actually prefer not to use a microphone, especially that one where you have to have this thing on your head. And I don't like that. I mean, if you're broadcasting, I would tolerate it. Can everybody hear me? Can you hear me in the back? Okay. So why is this also indicative of the relationship between the soul and God? Because God is Purusha and we are Prakriti. Now, one thing I'd like us to keep in mind as we read through this is most likely each of us have been both male and female in various lifetimes. Most likely. Most likely, those of us who are women have not been only women, and those of us who are men have not been only men. So this is a particular role we are playing in this particular lifetime. It's not who I am. There are many religions on the planet that think that whatever you are right now, that is what you are forever. But that is not the case. So Prabhupada is speaking here about a difference. It's interesting how he puts it. He says, as constituted by bodily frame, a man always wants to be superior to his wife, and a woman as bodily constituted. And he talks about the difference in psychology. So both our bodily frame and our psychology are not the soul. This is extremely important to understand. The particular bodily frame that we have now, and even the particular psychology that we have now. If I'm going too fast for your translation, you will let me know, yes? Okay. This is something external to the soul. Huh? It's not that the soul in a particular body is naturally superior to the soul in another body. But different bodies and different psychologies in a particular life have different natures. It just is. It just is. And trying to deny that or trying to fight that is not particularly intelligent. So right now in 2018, there is a growing movement of people saying, no, I don't like the body that I have. I don't like the psychology that I have. And with chemicals and surgery, I will try to make it a different body. Good luck with that. So, I mean, we have instances, interestingly enough, we have instances in the Bhagavatam of people who in one life did change from man to woman, woman to men. So that story is very interesting. There's one particular story. Any of you know that story in the Bhagavatam? Where is that story? Do you know? Where a man changed to a woman, woman to man to woman to man in one life. Do you know?
Is it externally?
Yeah, completely. So you have not read that far in the Bhagavatam, huh? It's in the 9th canto. No, not Puranjan. That was after death. Puranjan had died and took birth as a woman. That's different. We all do that. Almost guaranteed. If you are a man now, you have probably been a woman in some life. If you're a woman now, you've probably been a man in some life. That's pretty much everybody. But no, in the 9th canto, there's a very interesting story. Actually, I was a Gurukul teacher for many years, and one time I had a student come who was very angry. She didn't really like Krishna consciousness. She was 13. Very difficult. So one day I said to her, like second, third day in school, I gave her this story in the Bhagavatam. I said, here, read this story. And after that, she was very interested in Krishna consciousness. She says, oh, this is a very interesting philosophy. So there was this king who didn't have any children. And for a king not to have a child is a very big deal because he has to arrange for succession. And that's his job. So the king wanted a child, and he particularly wanted a son to become the next king. So his guru Vasistha arranged that they would do a yajna. This is very common in the scriptures. They would do a yajna. You know, nowadays people go to a fertility clinic, but in those days they would do a yajna. And then they would get this payasa, and the woman would, nowadays the woman takes Clomid or something, but then they would give him this payasa. So during the yajna, the queen went to the priest and said to him, actually, I want a daughter. I don't want a son. And so the priest got distracted, and he chanted the mantra for a girl. So the wife ate the payasa and had relations with her husband and became pregnant, and the baby's born, and it's a girl. And at first the king is happy to get a child, because he had no children, but then he's thinking, wait a minute, I particularly wanted a son to become the next king. And so he complained, and he went to Vasistha, and he said, how is it I got a girl? And Vasistha says, all right, we will change the child into a boy. So Vasistha, by his mantras and his mystic power, he changed the girl child into a boy child. So same soul, but completely changed. So now it was a boy child. He grew up and became the prince. Well, if they're going to leave the door open, I definitely need to use the microphone. So if they want to hear, then I'll use the microphone. Do they have the door open because they want to hear? Oh, I see. Okay. So one day, the prince was traveling with other soldiers on horses, and they were out hunting. Many stories in the Bhagavatam about problems with hunting, by the way. Many people seem to have... They're allowed to hunt, but then they have these problems. Anyway, so they're out hunting, and they enter a forest, and they all become women. The prince, all of his associates, and the horses also. Horses turned from stallions into mares. Now what happened is this was a forest of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva used to sport with Parvati there. And one time when he was sporting with Parvati, some sages came to see him, and Parvati was not dressed. And she was very embarrassed. And she said, this is our sporting forest. Only females can enter. And if any male tries to enter, they will become female. So all of the soldiers and all of the horses turned into females. So the prince was a little distressed that he had become a woman. And so now she just stayed in the forest. She didn't go back to the kingdom. And while she was in the forest, one demigod, Buddha, who was the son of the moon, ended up being attracted to her and marrying her and having children with her. And this is one of the reasons why this story is in the Bhagavatam, is because this is part of the moon dynasty in which Krishna appears. So as a woman, she was married to the son of the moon, and this is Krishna's dynasty. So finally, this was discovered. The prince didn't come back, and they discovered this woman was actually the prince. And so there was some difficulty. And Vasistha said, well, at birth I changed the child from a girl to a boy. But if I change now back from a girl to a boy again, the problem is I'm going against the will of Parvati. And I'm not willing to do that. So they appealed to Lord Shiva. We have a problem. There's nobody to run the kingdom. This is the only heir. And now this person is a woman. So Shiva said, all right. Or Vasistha, I can't remember exactly. Every other month, she could switch. So 1 month he'd be a man, 1 month he'd be a woman, 1 month man, 1 month woman. Whole life was like this. And it says the citizens didn't like this very much. It was disturbing to the citizens. And as a man, he also married, and he also produced children. So in one lifetime, as a woman, she produced children. As a man, he produced children. And what's also interesting, at the end of her life, she went to the forest as a vanaprastha and became a pure devotee and went back to home, back to Godhead. It is a very interesting story. And I understand one of the purposes of this story is so we can understand I'm not this body. The particular psychology that I have is external to me. When this jiva had the body of a woman, then she had the psychology and the nature of a woman. And when he had the body of a man, he had the psychology and nature of a man. I mean, one thing we should note is in this Bhagavatam story, when this jiva changed back and forth, they were a real man and a real woman. Not like today, where they just artificially... It was real. Because the person could function fully as a male and as a female in both the cases. Now I hope you are curious to read the ninth canto of the Bhagavad-gita.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a famous story in the Mahabharata of Shikhandi. Of course, with Shikhandi, it was interesting because Bhishma's mood was, this is not really a man. Bhishma said, of course Bhishma knew that it was the Amba had this desire, and I think Bhishma was also ready to leave. This is my opinion, that Bhishma was like, okay, I've already lived long enough. And he was using this simply as an excuse. But the point is that we should always remember, my dear friends, that whatever body and psychology we have is not us. It is temporary. It is temporary. It is just something external. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't respect it. If you don't like the particular body and psychology that you have, it's very temporary. It's very temporary. And to try to make everything equal or the same on the physical or mental platform is not possible. Maybe if you have Vasistha's mystic power, you can change. But you know, today they don't have this power. And to try to artificially, it's not important. In one level, on a spiritual level, these things are not at all important. If you are a man, you are a woman, you are Indian, you are Chinese, you are very intelligent, you have Down syndrome. I saw one little girl last night at the program with Down syndrome. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you have a 200 IQ or you have a 60 IQ, if you have a big, strong, healthy body, when I was in Russia, they had a big festival. We had the Vyasa-san up on a stage and a big Murti of Prabhupada on the Vyasa-san. And for Guru Puja, these two men were picking up the Vyasa-san from the stage and carrying it, and then two other men would pick up the Vyasa-san and put it down. So if you have a body like that, or if you have crutches and you can hardly walk, it doesn't matter. If you have a psychology that you want to be a leader, if you have a psychology you want to be a follower, it doesn't matter. You can still go back to home, back to Godhead. You can go, you know, it's like arguing, well, what is better? Do we have a plane, a boat, a car, a bicycle, or roller skates, you know? Whatever you have, just use it to go back to home, back to Godhead. But it's important to know what we have. In one sense, it doesn't matter. Any jiva can go back to Godhead. Even sometimes animals like monkeys and vultures, dogs, right? We have examples in the Shastra. But generally, as long as you have a human body, if you have a human body, that's enough. That's enough. It may even be aboriginal human body. Doesn't matter. If it's a human body, it's enough. So why do we need to know about these bodily things? Why is it important at all? Well, it's important for two reasons, at least, that I can think of. One reason is, even in bhakti, that we need to serve Krishna according to our abilities. So you're not going to ask a five-year-old child to drive a car. You're not going to say to the five-year-old child, please drive and get the boga. That would not be appropriate. And they would not ask me to carry the Vyasa san up from a two-meter stage down to the ground, because I would drop it and I would be in the hospital. So it is, some services doesn't matter. Everybody can chant Hare Krishna, everybody can preach, everybody can, the 64 angas of bhakti, doesn't matter what kind of body you have. But when it comes to our practical service for Krishna, we should be understanding, what is my body, what is my nature, what is my psychology? Because Krishna wants us to serve according to our nature. He makes this very clear in the Bhagavad Gita. You must serve according to your nature. And he's talking about our temporary nature. He's perhaps also talking about our eternal nature. So you have to know, what is my nature? What is my nature? What do I like? What do I'm good at? You cannot drive a car like it is a boat. So to argue what is better, a car, a boat, a plane, a bicycle, this is a complete waste of time. But to understand, what vehicle do I have and how can I use it to serve Krishna, that is valuable. Another reason it is valuable is that we need to deal with each other. And to a large extent, we need to deal with each other according to our body and psychology. We can't all deal with each other 100% on the spiritual platform. First of all, many of us are not awakened to what is our spiritual nature. Some of us may know, I am a cowherd boy, or I am a gopi, or I am Krishna's mother, or I am Krishna's father. Some of us may know that, but many of us do not know that. So how are we going to relate to each other on that platform? That will be very difficult. So practically, we have to relate to each other. You are older than me, you are younger than me, you are male, you are female. I had an experience several years ago in London. I went into a shop to get something for my deities. And the person working in the shop, I could not tell if it was a man or a woman. I just couldn't tell. The person had a name tag, but the name, I couldn't tell if it was a man's name or a woman's name. And I just didn't know, is this a woman or a very young man? I could not tell, and I'm thinking. And afterwards, when I left the shop, I was thinking, why did I care? I'm just going to buy something. What does it matter? And then I realized, because my relationship changes. If I'm dealing with another woman, I deal differently than if I'm dealing with a man. Even on the subtle platform, isn't it? There's a difference.
Yes?
I was sitting in a dentist's office many, 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 many years ago. I don't know, 20, 30 years ago. So I was looking at one of the magazines, and it was some man who was a house husband. You understand? So the wife was working, and the man was home with the children. And he was saying he would take his children to play groups where there were parents and children, and he would be the only man. And he said that whenever he was the only man in groups of women, he felt what he called some sexual tension. And I thought about it, and I thought, it's a fact. If I'm dealing with a man who's not my husband, my father, my son, like that, I always have a little wall. I'm putting up a little wall, and I'm basically subtly saying no, 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 all of the time. You understand? When I'm with other women, I'd have no wall. Is gone. I realized this also when I was at a ladies' retreat one time, and there was it was in New Zealand, and I've been to many Vaishnavi retreats, and at most of them there are some men there doing something, but at this one there was no men at all for like 3 days. first time in my life I had been without any males for 3 days. And it was just like, whew. That the little, the energy that I have to put out when I am with a man, I didn't have to spend that energy, you understand? There was like a part of my energy that I always have to put out. I didn't have to put it out. And it, when it was gone, I noticed that it was gone. Oh, Hare Krishna! I was so much hoping that I would see you. Hare Krishna, it's so nice to see you. Hare Krishna. So anyway, there it does matter. We cannot say it doesn't matter at all. In bhakti, it doesn't matter. In one sense, for the 64 angas of bhakti, it doesn't matter. And if we are saying, you know, only men can do this anga of bhakti, or only women can do this anga of bhakti, my dear friends, that is a big mistake. But when it comes to practical service, then there's distinction not only between men and women, there's distinction, are you a physicist or are you a cook? You know, there's a little intelligence. I don't understand why people cannot have a little bit of intelligence in these things. And then when it comes to our dealings with each other, it also matters. So here it's talking about the marriage relationship, but this also applies somewhat to any time in the family. Even you're dealing with your children, the way you deal with your children of the same gender, your children of the opposite gender, there's some difference. So let's look at the different principles here, because I think this is one of the most lovely verses and purports. I was so happy when I saw that I was going to give class on this verse. I'm like, yes, I really like this verse. So I think this is a very good guide. At the same time, it can be misused. So I want to look at it both ways. So let's look at each of the things here. So Vishrambena is with intimacy. So naturally, husband-wife relationship is intimate. Obviously. It is the most intimate of all the relationships for obvious physical reasons. But it's intimate not only on a gross bodily platform, but it's also, I mean, I suppose there's another kind of deep intimacy between parents and infant. But it's not mutual, right? When the parents are serving the infant, the parents are very intimate with the infant, but the infant's not so intimate with the parents. But in the marriage, it's a mutual intimacy. But that's also true psychologically and emotionally. That with the marriage partner, they really know you. They know you in a way. In the Bible, their euphemism for sexual intercourse is knowing, they will say. And then he knew his wife and they had a son. So, but we also have a kind of knowing psychologically. Now, intimacy is very important in our relationship with Krishna, because this also deals with our relationship with Krishna. We say the most intimate rasa is that of Madhurya. The most intimate relationship is the romantic relationship, where there's full freedom. One knows Krishna fully. Huh? It includes the qualities of all of the other rasas. But the next thing Prabhupada talks about as being very important is with great respect, Gauravena. And Prabhupada said intimacy should not negate respect. And it's interesting that he says that this is very important in serving the husband or the Lord. Right? You don't want a kind of intimacy that leads to contempt. And if you think about this, that there's research that shows that one thing that kills relationships is when there's no more mystery. When you think you know somebody so well that it becomes boring. There's nothing more to know about them. Now, of course, it's not true. There's an unlimited amount to know about anybody. And, of course, with Krishna, there's always more to know about Krishna. But Krishna feels there's always more to know about us also. Krishna likes it when the jiva surprises him. He does. You know, two examples I can think of are one with Rukmini, where Krishna was telling Rukmini, now you can find another husband. And she fainted. And Krishna said to her, I didn't expect you to faint. I expected you to argue. Even then, when she didn't actually argue, once she understood his intention, if you look carefully, she didn't argue much. She mostly just agreed. She showed how everything he said was right. You know those examples where Sarasvati takes the demon's words and changes them into something positive? So if you read that conversation, Rukmini took all these self-criticisms, Krishna was criticizing himself, and she said, no, this is a good thing. Like Krishna said, I'm penniless, I don't own anything. And she said, yeah, you don't own anything because you are everything. But anyway, she surprised him. She surprised him by fainting. Also, when Krishna and Radharani are speaking, right, she asks him a question. She says, where's your clothing? Where's your vesh? Where's your clothing? And he says, I have gotten this fragrance simply by association with you. I didn't ask about your fragrance. I asked about your clothing. So she comes up with new answers. He comes up with new answers. They surprise each other. He doesn't know what she's going to say. You understand? Huh? Otherwise, it's no fun if you know what the person is going to say. And another example is with Agasura. When Krishna did not want the coward boys to go into Agasura's mouth. But they did anyway. And they were thinking, if we go into Agasura's mouth, Krishna will get an opportunity to be a hero. And we know he likes to be a hero. So we will give him a chance. Please do not try this at home. Don't purposely go into trouble so Krishna will save you. But anyway, Krishna was then like, okay, now what do I do? But the point is that Krishna is sometimes surprised by the jiva, and he likes to be surprised by the jiva. He likes to find out more and more new things about us, and we find more and more new things about him. So it doesn't become this like, oh, I already know you. And it doesn't become, I know you so well. Many years ago, there was this book circulating in ISKCON, How to Be a Good Wife, written by a Christian lady. And we were just giving it privately and secretly because the mood in ISKCON then was you cannot read anything except Prabhupada's books or you are in big maya. So we were circulating this book secretly, right? And she was also saying, going the other way, she's saying that the man may show his best side in public and his worst side at home because he relaxes. She said the woman may just have to take it hearing from others about her husband's good side. She doesn't see it. So this is not good. Not that we come home and we relax so much that we lose all respect for our spouse. Oh, I'm home. My wife is going to love me anyway. My husband is going to love me anyway. Doesn't matter what I do. I'll walk around all day in my sleeping clothes and throw my dirty socks on the floor. And there should be... That's not respectful for the other person. This is a person, okay, they've made a promise, they're not going to leave you, but don't take advantage of it. Right? One of my married grandsons, not the one who's here, I have one married grandson here with me now with his wife. They're resting because we got in very late. I wish I was also resting. But anyway. No, it's very nice to be with all of you. But I have another married grandson, so his wife posted something. She said, marriage means that if you act, you can act like a fool and you know that there's going to be too much paperwork for your husband to leave you. But we shouldn't take advantage. We shouldn't take advantage. You know, this person has made a promise to stay and there would be so much difficulty to leave me and we have children, so, you know, they'll stay and I can do anything. No, there should be respect. I hear it's talking about respect from the wife to the husband, but also there should be respect from the husband to the wife. Krishna also treats the jiva with respect. Please do not think that Krishna is disrespectful to the jiva. Okay, then we have self-purity, atma-sochena, purity of mind and body. So this relationship between husband and wife, it's a sacred relationship. It's a yajna. Nowadays, they define marriage as simply two adults who agree. Huh? That is now the definition of marriage. You are an adult, I am an adult, we agree that is marriage. But that is not marriage. Marriage, also Krishna must agree. That there must be some purity of body and mind in the relationship. It is a yajna. It is something very sacred. It is not just, oh, here's some facility for me to... have sex and money and a home and, you know, everything that I want in the world. No, not like that. This is a way of dedicating my mind and body to the Lord. It's a very sacred thing. And then we have Dhammena, with control of the senses. So again, just because I have somebody who is there for me doesn't mean that I can do and say and act however I like. And this is true for the wife, and it's also, frankly, equally true for the husband. It's not that, oh, I have, you know, this woman is here to serve me, and so I can just treat her however I want. And there are, frankly, we have to say, there are many men who take this kind of instruction and think, oh, I can hurt my wife. We see this, unfortunately, we see it even in ISKCON. And we see it in all over the world where men think, oh, there's something in the scripture that says, my wife has to control her senses. And therefore, if she does something I don't like, I don't have to control my senses. But we should have some control. I remember, I think I was about 22, 23 years old. And I decided that even when I'm angry, I should not say things that I would not say when I am not angry. Because then the husband doesn't know, when are you telling the truth? When you are angry or when you are not angry? It always creates some doubt, you know? If when you are angry, you say very nasty things, you don't behave properly, you throw things around the room or whatever. So I decided, even when I am angry, I am going to say only things I really mean. Some sense control. Now, by the way, I should mention briefly, sense control does not mean repression. Okay? This is a very important point. Sense control does not mean repression. Sense control does not mean repression. Sense control does not mean repression. Repression may be useful for a minute or two in an emergency. You know, if you really want to hit somebody, then repressing that as in an emergency for a few seconds is all right. But that is not repression of things. Eventually they will come out. That is, Krishna says, not attachment and not aversion. Very, very important point. Part of our sadhana is we do not want to express all of our material emotions. Nowadays in psychology they're saying don't repress, you should express. That's not good either. Then there's no sense control either. But there's another alternative. Or another thing people do is just numb themselves. They just watch TV all day, or they work really, really hard to try not to feel anything. So it's not that you want to express, and it's not that you want to repress. You want to be detached. Detached is not repression. You have a higher inner life, and you just simply say, oh, anger has entered my body. Anger has entered my mind. This is Krishna's energy. It's not mine. I accept that it's here, and I let it go. I give the example, like if some dog comes to your house, do you feed it? No, unless you want it to come every day. Do you kick it? No. Let it go. Somebody else's dog. Some stray dog. Or monkeys. You know, in India, everybody knows you don't feed the monkeys. Very dangerous. If you feed the monkeys, then they'll come to your house every day, and they'll come to your house every day, they'll jump on your roof, they'll break your water tank, yes? They'll tear your clothes apart. You do not feed the monkeys. Sometimes the Westerners go and they're very sentimental and they think, oh, we should feed the monkeys in our house. Ooh. So this is the monkeys of modes of material nature. And when they enter our mind and body, we do not feed them, but we do not kick them either. We're not supposed to throw rocks at the monkeys. You can pretend to make them scared, but you don't actually hurt them. So when these urges come, Vacha Vega, Manasa Krodha Vega, not my monkeys, not my circus. This is the mantra. Not my monkeys, not my circus. This is Krishna's material energy. Krishna says in 14:22, one who does not hate attachment, illumination, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active. And this is particularly important in the marriage relationship because of the intimacy. So because of the intimacy, one may feel, oh, I can express anything. But no. We're dealing with another jiva, and for most of us, we're dealing with another Vaishnava. Not only jiva, but Vaishnava. So without sense control, we have the risk of committing Vaishnava aparad. So it's a very important thing that we learn this sense control, which means I do not feed my monkeys, and I do not kill my monkeys. They're not my monkeys. They're Krishna's material energy. It's Krishna's modes of nature. It's not... I do not need to control the material nature. That is not my... That's Krishna's business. That's not my business. So I control my senses by not trying to control the material nature. That's what I renounce. I renounce my desire to be the controller of material nature. As long as I have this body and this mind, so many desires and emotions and thoughts are going to come into the body and mind. But we should be like rivers flowing into the ocean that is not disturbed. And this is true for both husband and wife. And then we have with service. So of course, husband is also serving the wife. But particularly the wife takes the role of service. Of course, husband is also serving. How is that? You cannot have a relationship where you are not serving each other. That is, it's not possible. Everybody is serving. But particularly the woman is in the mood of service. Like Krishna is serving us, yes? But we don't say, oh Krishna, you're my servant. So this is part of the difference in male-female psychology. And if the women don't like it, please remember, we are not this body. It's very temporary. And if it really bothers you, all that will happen is you will take birth as the opposite gender in your next life. So, just please, let it go. The women who are really, you know, I don't want to serve a man, I don't want to... You know, it's just envy, that's all. It's just envy that, oh, this jiva has a different body than mine, and then you'll get that body next life. Do you really want to do that, or would you rather go back to home, back to Godhead? You know, if you really want to do it, it is available, and then you can become a man, and you can have some woman serve you, and you can find out it's not all great, is it? Has its own problems. Yeah? Female body has its problems. Does the male body have problems? Yes. Definitely. So, just, this is my role in this life, Hare Krishna. Now, one thing about this service in marriage that I think is very misunderstood. Is it all right if I go a little bit over 8:30?
Yeah, no problem.
Such an important topic, you know, One thing that I think is very, very misunderstood in the Hare Krishna movement is we think that the wife doing service means that her only job is as a domestic servant. We think the only thing the wife should do is what a hired servant would do. Cooking, cleaning, laundry, childcare. And the only difference would be the sexual relationship. My dear friends, in the Shastra, and in traditional Varnashram society, do women have Varna? Do women have Varna? I'm asking you. When you arrange marriage between a man and a woman, do you consider the Varna or not?
Yes.
How important is that? How important? Do your parents want you to marry someone of a different Varna? Do they think, oh, it's not very important? Your parents, your grandparents. They say, oh, it's not very important. You can marry anyone of any caste. Is that what they say?
No.
How important do they think this is?
Very important.
Now, they are understanding caste in the wrong way. They are understanding caste by birth. Krishna says, guna karma vibhagashana. But why do they think it's very important? Have you ever thought about this? Why do they think it's so important?
Compatibility
of what? Two things. Chatur Vanyam Mayashristam Guna Karma. Have you thought about this? Now, if the men have Varna by Guna and Karma and not by birth, do you agree? This is our principle. The women also have Varna by Guna and Karma and not by birth. Please open your mind to this. So Devahuti was born in a Kshatriya family, but Kardama Muni asked for a compatible wife. So was Devahuti of the mood of a Kshatriya or the mood of a Brahmana? Brahmana, she must be. Was she living like a Kshatrani? No, she's living like a Brahmani. She never lived like a Kshatriya. Even when he gave her opulence, she never lived like a kshatriya. She lived like a brahmana. And that was the benediction of the Lord. You will get a woman who is compatible. In the Shastra, whenever there's mixed varna marriage that's not actually compatible, does the woman change her varna? With Romaharshan Sutta, his mother was a brahmana, father was a kshatriya. Did the woman become a kshatriya by marrying a kshatriya? Did she? No. The child is considered mixed caste. And interestingly, which caste did he identify with, mothers or fathers? Mothers. Romaharshan Sutta was identified as a brahmana, his mother was a brahmana. With Vidura, he had brahmana, father, shudra, mother. Who was he identified with?
Mother.
Think about this one. This is a pattern. You know, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev were half-brothers. They both had kshatriya father. Vasudev had kshatriya mother. Nanda had Vaishya mother. Who are they identified with? Mother. With the mother. So when you have a mixed caste marriage, the woman does not become the caste of the husband. And the children are usually identified with the mother's varna more than the father's. So very interesting. So the woman has her own varna. So one reason that there is marriage between same caste is, first of all, the different varnas have different psychologies. And they have different psychologies in terms even of ethics. What is ethical for one varna, this is why you don't want brahmanas running a government. Because they'll forgive everybody. This is a big problem in our ISKCON movement. Seriously. We have many, many people in a managerial capacity are of a brahmana varna. And so this is a big reason we have so much problem with justice and morals and ethics in ISKCON. Because that is the realm of the kshatriya. That is not the realm of the brahmana. You know, and the kshatriya has to act quickly. The brahmana will say, I need to study this and do some research. You know, so I'm the chairperson of a group of brahmanas, the Shastric Advisory Council. And so we have a very important service we're doing right, and we work for the GBC. So we arranged a meeting in Italy, and it was some expense to fly in the members from all over the world and get their visas. We only had 10 days, and one day we took to see Milan, so we only had 9 days. So at one point we asked everybody, okay, you take 2 days, each of you take some different area, and you research it and come back. So when we came back, we're going around, what did you find? And one of them said, well, I spent these 2 days thinking. That is a brahmana, you know. Go do some work. First I have to think for 2 days. Oh, that'll be very different as if you're the government, you may have to make decisions. So different psychology. Right? Prabhupada talks about the psychology of a kshatriya woman. He gives the story that the king came back from the battle and they're knocking at the gate of the palace. My dear queen, your husband has come back from battle. Oh, was he victorious? No, he was defeated. Is he wounded? No, he is fine. Then he is not my husband, she said. Prabhupada tells this story. She says, imposter. My husband would only be defeated if he was wounded. Don't let him in. Imposter. She knew it was her husband. Prabhupada tells this story. And then the king could understand, and he went back out and he became victorious. So different mentality. Each of the varnas, there's a different mentality. And if the mentality of the husband and wife is very different, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. Right? So if one partner says, you know, I'm very renounced, I don't care about making very much money, I don't want any furniture, I want to study Bhagavatam all day. And the woman is like, you know, I need to have 40 saris and I need to... A little, or the other way. If the man says, I want to give you 40 saris with gold jari, and she says, I really don't care. I'm happy to wear two old clothes all the time. I've seen marriages like this. It's not pleasing. You know. And then each person thinks the other one is in Maya, by the way, is what happens. So first of all, it's for psychological compatibility, because in the different varnas, there's a different sense of what is good and what is bad. But the other reason is karma, work. So when we say the wife serves the husband, my dear friends, traditionally this meant that she also served him in his career. Prabhupada talks about the ideal family life. He said, the husband is weaving the cloth, the wife is weaving the cloth, the children are weaving the cloth. This is happy family life. Do not think Draupadi was simply sitting eating grapes all day. She said in the Mahabharata, she says to Satyabhama, I am managing the royal household. 100,000 people. That's a city. She was managing. She said, only I know what is the income and expenditure. I am managing. She was basically the secretary of the treasury. So she was also running the government. She was not the chief, but she was assisting her husband in government. And we see this in the old traditional families. Yes? The wife was also assisting in the career, and the children were also learning in the career. Now, this happens if the career is at home. Industrialization has moved the career out of the home. So now, if the wife is assisting in career, the home life is disturbed. Industrialization did a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to women, particularly, that it made women have to choose between home and career. Very terrible thing. And before the widespread use of birth control and abortion, women had to choose home. There was no choice. And now, with widespread birth control and abortion, the women are choosing career. And they are neglecting, they are not marrying till they are 35, and then they're only having one child, and so forth and so on. This is happening even in our Krishna consciousness movement. But in a sane society, woman has home and career. She doesn't have to choose. What a terrible thing to do to half of the human population. To have to not use your psychology and your nature and your... terrible, terrible thing. Some people will say to me, well, women only have guna. Of the varna, they only have... Some people say women don't have varna. I said, and you're reading a different scripture than I'm reading. In the Bhagavatam, women have varna. They say, oh, that means just the guna. And then I say, if you have the guna, but you cannot express in karma, what will you feel? How will you feel? If you have the qualities, but you cannot express those qualities in actions, how will you feel? Yes? How will you feel? Everybody, together, how will you feel? Frustrated. It is this frustration that has led to the women's liberation movement, frankly. Because industrialization removed the ability for women to have a career. If a woman had to have it, it destroyed extended family. Industrialization destroyed the extended family. That also facilitated women working. Right? If you have your grandma and your mother-in-law and your, right? Your aunties and your uncles, then the one woman doesn't have to do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the laundry, all the... Yeah. I know one devotee, he was Indian, brought up in America. He married an Indian woman born in India. When they got married in India, she says, I want 15 children. They came to America. After 1 year, she said, 2. And he said, why? She said, because I have to do all the work myself. So industrialization, it destroyed extended family. And it pushed work out of the house. And the main people that suffered were the women. The women lost their varna. And so we have this model in like 1940s, 1950s, where the women were only at home doing housework. And people think, oh, that is the Vedic model. No, that is a perversion due to industrialization. As I said, at first women were just choosing home. They had to. Biologically, they didn't have a choice. Now they are just choosing career. And this is destroying the society. It's destroying the society. Yes? People don't marry young. If they don't marry young, they have illicit sex. Yes? Yes?
Yes.
This is the reality. Correct? And then they cannot have very many children, and the children, they often have problems with health and fertility and so many things, and the whole home life is disturbed. And the woman is going out to work, and so nobody's cooking, and they have to eat all this chemically prepared food, and they become ill, and the children are not cared for, and so many things. So the service to the husband included service to the husband in his career. And ideally, husband and wife share the same career. So this way, service to the husband includes taking care of the career. It includes working in the career. And this can be done in the home as part of the extended family. And this is something we should be aiming for. Huh? It is part of the duty of the husband, Prabhupada says. Actually, it's in the Bhagavatam verses, that the husband must engage his wife in service to the Lord and in service to the public. This does not just mean when guests come to your house, but it means he must engage the woman according to her nature. This is his responsibility. It's your responsibility with your children. So if the man thinks, because the woman serves me, that means she should just be like a free domestic servant. So, of course, if your wife has the mentality, the varna of a domestic servant, that is okay. Some women, that is their varna. And then they are happy just simply cooking and cleaning. That is okay. But if the wife has another propensity, it is the duty of the husband. That is part of his protection of her, is to engage her in her propensity in the service of the Lord and to engage her in her propensity for the good of society. And then the wife will be very satisfied to serve the husband. She'll not be disturbed. So then the next one here is love. Sohridena. So Krishna says he is the suited. So there should be a great feeling of love and friendship. Srila Prabhupada talks about this as friendship. So it's not mechanical. And sometimes you may say, well, it's hard to love my husband. But please try. Find something you can love. After all, Krishna loves all of us, so. Don't make it just a dry duty, you know. Oh, I'm a good Hindu wife, and so I can't divorce, and here I am stuck with this creep. But try to find something you can love. Somewhere where the service is done with real love. And of course, again, it's not that only the woman should love the husband and the husband should not love the wife. Prabhupada talks about seeing the wife as the better half and protecting her. He says, as one protects one's own body. And in this also story of Pranamuni and Devahuti, Prabhupada talks about a mutual exchange of service and love. And again, this is avoiding the kind of intimacy that breeds contempt. So you know somebody very well, you know their faults, you know what can be done. You know each other's faults, you know each other's weaknesses. But concentrate on what you can love. Concentrate on the good things. Krishna does this. Krishna sees good in Putana, you know. How does he do that? I have no idea. He sees good in Kamsa and Pundraka. He says, Pundraka, okay, you dressed up like me, you can become like me in the spiritual world. You know, it's like, he's like this. So we can try to focus on the good in someone and find something where you can feel some genuine love and nurture that genuine love. You know, when people are first married, usually there's some, but it can be a more mature friendship love, but it should be real. And then this other one, sweet words. Vacha Madhuraya, with sweet words. So here, because this is about Devahuti to Kardama, Prabhupada is particularly talking about, you know, the husband may have so many difficulties, and he comes home, and the wife should speak sweetly. Right, so in this book about how to be a good wife, she talked about that. She said, you know, not that the man comes home from work, and you simply say, you know, the sink still doesn't work. It's been a month, and the kids have been driving me crazy. You take them, bye. You know, not to just dump your problems on the poor man. He's like, yeah, come here to relax. Well, this is my shelter. And again, it's not that the husband should speak harsh words. The austerities of speech are for everybody. There's five austerities of speech. So what are they? So not agitating language. What else? Truthful. It should be, the message should be pleasing.
Beneficial.
It should have some good purpose and based on the Vedas. And this is for everybody. Not because I am the husband and I am in the superior position, I can treat my wife like a piece of poop. And she should speak very sweetly to me, and I can speak very harshly to her. And I have seen, you know, I've seen devotees do this. I've seen devotees do this, you know, that the men just think, yeah, you're this, you're that, you're insulting her. And I'm telling you, you're not going to please Krishna if you do this. With anybody. We should have the austerities of speech with anybody. Of course, in an intimate family, sometimes we're going to be a little casual. That is natural. But these things should be there. What we say should be beneficial. It should be benefiting my spouse and benefiting me. If it's not beneficial, please don't say it. It should be true. But it should be, the content should be pleasing and the words should not be agitating. Agitating words, like insulting words, curse words. You know, when the Kshatriyas, when they go on the battlefield, they use agitating words. Why? Because even the Kshatriyas, you know, you're going to be a little afraid to fight. You might lose your arm. You know, you're going to do something, you might have your right arm cut off. So you might be hesitant. You might die. Right? Might lose your eye. So you're a little hesitant. So they insult each other. You've noticed this in the Shastra? They insult each other. Why? To irritate the person. So they become so angry that they will fight. You understand? Mm-hmm. Don't do this in a marriage. Okay? Don't make the marriage a battlefield. It's not. And then you're all wounded, you know? There we go. But these austerities of speech. Now, most important thing is beneficial of these five austerities. So whatever we say should be a benefit to the other and benefit to ourselves. And ultimately a benefit to Krishna. It should be pleasing to Krishna. The woman should deal with the husband to please Krishna. The husband should deal with the wife to please Krishna. And avoid agitating language. Do you know when we use agitating language? When we are feeling hurt, we want to hurt the other person. But that is not sattva-gun, my dear friends. What mode is that in? Mode of ignorance. You have hurt me, I will hurt you. Very expert at insulting others. That is tamaguna. How will we attain bhakti if we are in tamaguna? Good luck. If we are doing bhakti in tamaguna, you will go on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes to attain Krishna prema. Kapila talks about doing bhakti in tamaguna. Please do not do this. Treat each other nicely. Sometimes we treat the cow better than we treat our spouse. So the language should not be agitating. Not with repression. With detachment. It's different. Not repression. Not repression. Not repression. Not repression. Detachment. Yes, there's some feeling of hurt in my body. My spouse did something, I am feeling some hurt, I am feeling some anger. But it's just the modes of material nature, not my monkeys, not my circus. I identify, there's anger, there's hurt, there's fear, there's grief. It is Krishna's. Yes, it is here, let it go. Not my monkeys, not my circus. And treat the other with respect and sweet words, not with repression. Not with repression. And there's many more things we could say, but the time is late, so I'll end with the other point Prabhupada makes here about recognizing the difference in psychology. Prabhupada's talking here about the male psychology. Other places he talks about the female psychology. So when a jiva is in the body of a man, he has this mood that he wants to feel that the woman needs him. That is his motive. So I'm going to talk specifically to the ladies right now, but if you men want to listen, we will allow you to stay. And then I'll talk to everybody again in a minute. So we women have the babies. So because we have the babies, we have a strong biological, chemical drive to want stability in our sexual relationship. Because we want the father of our child to stay around and help us. During pregnancy, we are vulnerable. During labor and birth, we are very vulnerable. Right after childbirth, we are also very vulnerable. Taking care of a young child, we are very vulnerable. We really, really want the male to stay around. And there are chemicals in our bodies, very strong chemicals, that push us toward a dharmic, stable relationship with a man. Now, nowadays, they're trying to break this psychologically in the women, and they're causing havoc. But if we go according to our nature, we are really pushed like that. Men do not have this. Okay? They don't have this. They do not have that same biological, chemical drive. So what is it that inspires the man for stability in relationship? It is the sense of being needed. With women, it is the sense of I need. With men, it is the sense of I am needed. If you do not help your husband to feel that he is needed, he will not have the impetus or the enthusiasm or the energy to take care of you. You may like that, you may not like it, but that is simply the biological reality. I was reading recently one medical doctor, she said, if your philosophy is not in sync with biology, there is something wrong with your philosophy. One way we know the will of the Lord is through biology. So you should practically actually need your husband. It should be real. But also, please do not listen to this, you should act like you need your husband even if you don't think you need him. Why? To please Krishna. To please Krishna. Just like with your children. Sometimes your children make you so frustrated that you want to put them in a package and send them off to Nigeria. But you still act favorably with them. Yes, you don't want to damage them. Inside you're thinking, I can't believe I ever had children. What was I thinking? Right? But still you're going to show them affection. It's your service. You're not going to damage the poor little creatures. Yeah? You're not going to damage them saying, I wish I'd never had you, you little man. Do you know how you just embarrass me in front of everybody in the community? No, you're going to treat them with affection. Well, that's your service. It's your jiva to take care of. In the same way with your husband. Your husband should always, always, always think that he is your hero and he is the most important person in your life. Whether he is or not. He should always think, my wife thinks that. That is your service. You say it is a game. Yes, it is a game. We are not these bodies. It's a role we are playing. But don't do it to please your husband. Do it to please Krishna. Don't do it to be a good wife. Do it to be a good devotee. Don't try to be a good wife, please. Try to be a good devotee. A good devotee means, I am in this body right now. I have had other bodies other times, so many other bodies. Right now, temporary life, 1/8 billionth of a second of Lord Brahma. Just have to tolerate the male psychology for that long. And that is the price. You want a husband to take care of you. You want him to love you. You want him to be affectionate with you and give you children and give you a home. This is your price. You treat him like a hero. And you make him feel like number one. And you make him believe that he is in charge. Whether he is or not is another thing. But you give him that. That is his psychological food, and if he doesn't have that, he will be very hungry. And his impetus to take care of the family will be compromised. Right? Now, for everyone, we have to respect psychology. The woman also has a psychology. The woman's psychology is that you are attracted to her. So my husband used to tell me, you are the most beautiful woman in the world. So I would look in the mirror and think, I don't know. I don't think so. But part of me would think maybe he believes that. You know? And that way I felt secure. You understand? I never asked him, do you really believe that? But I felt secure. And you can say, well, this is a game. But it's a game you're playing for Krishna. Again, don't try to be a good husband. That's a waste of time. You're not a husband. It's just temporary, superficial. It's not who you are. You're a soul. But try to be a good devotee. And a good devotee means I have this jiva. She's in a woman's body. Yes, you are the most beautiful woman in the world. Even if you know, objectively, that's not true. What is that woman now? She's getting old. Aishwarya Roy? Probably not anymore. Huh? But before, at least. So you may know, there's another woman objectively who's more beautiful. So in service to Krishna, we should take care of the psychology of the people that we are relating with. It doesn't matter. It's just temporary. Just do it for Krishna, you know? And the poor men, you know, the women, they think, oh my God, I got to deal with this male ego. That he always has to be right. Prabhupada says here, the man always has to think he's right. It's very annoying for women when you know he's not right. You know, and you're like, oh. Yes, dear. But remember, the men have to deal with something too, you know. Women in their prime of life, they have chemicals that make their emotions go like this. Yes, we all know this, ladies, yes. It's very nice when that is over, by the way. But, you know, in the youthful time of life, the woman's emotions are going like this. The men have to tolerate. Part of what attracts a man to a woman is when she's up. But you have to tolerate when she's down. Women go up and down. Yes? Yeah. Yes? I know, I'm in this body. You don't have to pretend it's not true. You have to tolerate. This is the time she's psychologically, emotionally down. Everything seems black. Everything seems wrong. It'll pass. Tolerate. And again, she'll go up. And then she'll go down. And she needs to feel love, she needs to feel cherished, she needs to feel that she's attractive, and he needs to feel that he's a hero. It's just a game in service to Krishna. Don't take it so seriously. Oh, some big burden that I have to deal with this female psychology, this male psychology. 8 billionths of a second, I think we can do it for Krishna, yes? Just imagine in the world. If everyone in the world had a stable marriage where the husband and wife were kind and supportive and respectful to each other. Forget about Krishna consciousness. Just that thing, materially, what would happen in the world? Would it be a nicer world? If people didn't hurt each other, if they were respectful to each other, they spoke sweetly to each other, they appreciated each other, they worked with the different psychologies of the other. Even if they weren't religious people, just that one change, imagine. Would you like to be in that world?
Yes.
Imagine if we could do that one thing in ISKCON. Would ISKCON be nicer?
Yes.
Yes. We're always talking about how to preach. This is a very good way to preach. If people see that, oh, you say that you're devotees, and in your marriages, you are cruel to each other. You don't respect each other. You don't respect each other's psychology. You don't give each other what you need. Then it's not going to be very attractive. What is the use of your Krishna consciousness and all your vrats and all your chanting Hare Krishna and all your pujas and all your this and all your that? If we can't deal with each other in a respectful and loving and caring manner. And please don't do this to be a good husband or a good wife. Please do not do this to be a good husband or a good wife. Sarva padi vinir muktan tar parate nirmala rishikesha rishikena sevanam bhakti vichite. If you try to do this from the platform of a new padi, it will fail. We cannot always be a good husband and a good wife because it's not who we ultimately are. But we can always be a good devotee. Take care of your wife to make Krishna happy. Take care of your husband to make Krishna happy. Okay? Can we do this?
Yes.
We can at least make a good effort.
Yes.
And when we fail, we can be humble. And if we're really failing, we can be humble enough to get help. Okay? If we're really, really failing, if we're really messing this up, be humble enough to get help. And please do not use the Shastra as an excuse to be a cruel, violent, mode of ignorance person. Do not say, well, the Shastra give me a license that I can act like an animal. I can act like a demon. Because I have the right. I don't think that would please Krishna, do you? So thank you for letting me go over time with this. But I thought, you know, I didn't want to deal with it just on a superficial platform. So I know some of you have to go to work and need to take prasadam. So